in the program, I was mentioning that how history repeats itself and how the anti-slavery movement spawned the women's suffrage movement the way the New Left spawned the women's movement, the women's liberation movement. And I have an article here, which is part of an ongoing department in the new Ms. magazine called How We Got Here. And the article is by Joanne Parent, P-A-R-R-E-N-T. It's called Looking for Love. And it's about the left and feminism. Let's face it. In the second round of the U.S. women's movement, we haven't always been filled with unconditional love for our sisters in struggle. Not that we have any better or worse than other, oppressed people. But our anger at years of discrimination and abuse has too often been directed at ourselves rather than at the men in power and the institutions that perpetuate inequality. Sometimes I see my own personal history in this movement as a saga of looking for love and acceptance from my sisters, but not always finding it. And because, as we discovered early on, that personal is political, perhaps my own growth has some parallels with the evolution of our movement away from our early self-righteous dogmatism to a more all-encompassing global spirit I hope we possess today. I was a student in the anti-war movement in Ann Arbor, Michigan in the late 60s, certain, as we all were, that the revolution was imminent. Our behavior was what we might now call intensely codependent. We cared desperately what other brothers and sisters thought about our ideas and actions. Our highest aspiration was to be PC, politically correct. Our greatest fear to be PI, politically incorrect. In the midst of this revolution, I joined with some of my sisters to form our first consciousness-raising group, where we talked about the usual complaints about our brothers in the struggle. The brothers, of course, didn't like hearing they were sexist, and the women who weren't in CR groups told us it was PI not to be supportive. Translation, sleep with the brothers who burned their draft cards. Some of us didn't even buy that line, thank the goddess. We didn't even know her then. But as this anti-Vietnam War movement heated up, so did the hormones of those involved in it. And everybody began looking for love in all the wrong places. Soon everyone, and I mean everyone, was expected to sleep with everyone else or be called counter-revolutionary. I couldn't cope. Even pre-AIDS, I could only handle one person at a time, so I moved on, ending up back in Detroit, my hometown, where my New York intellectual boyfriend was going to organize the auto workers. Though I tried to be PC and supportive, I soon found some like-minded sisters and formed another CR group. This was during the Vietnam War, and we accepted that the bad guys were the U.S. imperialists and the good guys were the people of the Third World seeking self-determination. But it bothered us that no matter how sexist the men in the Third World were, they were still the good guys. This led my CR group to the simple realization that was to send shockwaves through the leftist feminist cells around the country. In our Fourth World Manifesto, we argued that even within Third World cultures, women are oppressed. Women are the fourth world. More important, the bond between women cuts across all cultures and races, and a female culture exists, even though men have tried throughout history to crush and suppress it. I was ecstatic. We had discovered a basis for love and understanding between women that was deep and strong, that existed in the third world as well as here in the heart of imperialism. The fourth world women, as we were soon called, were feared far and wide. We were barred from a Toronto anti-war conference, although we did manage to smuggle some copies of our Fourth World Manifesto to a delegation of North Vietnamese women speaking there. Not about to accept our banishment lying down, we chained and padlocked the big iron gate at the only entrance to the school where the meeting was being held. If the leftist women were going to lock us Fourth World women out, by God, we would lock them in. This was probably PI and certainly vengeful, but it was great fun. Meanwhile, back in Detroit, I was looking for love from my sisters. We taught stop rape workshops and wrote a handbook. We did abortion counseling. It was before Roe v. Wade, and we helped women find clinics in the Free State of New York where the law denying them safe legal abortions had been struck down. And we organized a feminist conference restricted to real PC radical feminists, no leftists. They all came, the feminists from New York, the radical feminists from New York, the Red Stockings from New York, witches from New York. and various sisters from groups with less impressive names from all over the heartland. When some socialist women tried to crash, we promptly kicked them out just as they had kicked us out of their Toronto meeting. They were kinder, gentle socialists than we were radical feminists, however. They didn't lock us in to retaliate. For me, the major outcome of that conference was a fight with my boyfriend. A short, much-beloved New York poet and former witch who had stayed with me had written little anti-Marxist notes and left them in poor Richard's sacred copy of Das Kapital. I thought it was hilarious. He didn't. I was learning, and not just in theory, that when you bond with your sisters, guys can feel pretty threatened. The Vietnam War had almost ended, and even the new left was figuring out that the revolution might be delayed. A few of us women discovered that, to make it over the long haul, we needed credit in our own names. You couldn't always count on the boyfriend or husband to stick around once they realized they would have to do their share of the housework. Still revolutionaries, we decided to create our own institution rather than try to reform an existing one. So we started a credit union for women, the first of several that was springing up around the country. Soon, I found myself speaking to a mostly male crowd of 2,000 representing the credit union movement from around the state. I proposed that in all their literature and public materials, they changed brothers to sisters and brothers. When I finished, not a single person applauded. Stunned, I had started to walk off stage when the woman in the highest position, a woman had ever held in the Michigan Credit Union League, embraced me and thanked me in front of that mass of silent hostility. It was worth it. I was loved. Life was now filled with service to and love from my sisters. Our credit union grew to be larger than 75% of those in Michigan, and the Detroit chapter of the National Organization for Women gave us Feminist of the Year awards. But my euphoria didn't last. Other women's businesses from around the country contacted us, and we had another conference where we got it in our heads to start an organization to support feminist businesses. We thought this was PC, but many women around the country thought it not only PI, but capitalist. Unable to really argue that we weren't capitalists, we retaliated by calling them downwardly mobile. The sister against sister war of words began. Eventually, we gave up and dissolved this hated capitalist institution. I was close to hitting my feminist bottom when some New York friends now living at the beach in Los Angeles told me they still loved me and invited me to visit. They were starting a feminist magazine and could use my help. I packed up and left Detroit, the scene of the aborted workers' revolution, the aborted feminist economic miracle, and went to the City of Angels. I had a vision of love, and it was all that this land of sunshine and smog turned out to be. At first, my reputation as an authoritarian capitalist preceded me, and when I appeared in public, some particularly zealous feminists showed up to protest, but that only made my new allies love and protect me more. Another ex-Detroiter enlisted my help in organizing celebrities to speak out for the Equal Rights Amendment. We organized workshops where actresses and actors could practice debating legislators. We wrote speeches for them. We threw parties to raise loads of money for the ERA campaign. I knew I would have to be loved by my sisters for all this service. But no, now I was too Hollywood. As I started to feel a little better, recovering from my days as a battered feminist, and getting some tips on style from my new actress friends, I guess I didn't look like a sister is supposed to look. But for the first time, I didn't really care. Maybe Southern California's numerous therapies, seminars, and spiritual programs were having an effect on this vintage feminist brain. Maybe I was just growing up. I realized that many more women than I thought could be my sisters were my sisters. And I didn't need their approval all the time. All I needed was to do what I loved to do regardless of whether or not men or women loved me for it, which is really why I was a feminist in the first place. So that's my journey so far. And it's where many who have survived those early years have come. No longer looking for love in the wrong places, we can now accept ourselves and our sisters in all our different incarnations, through all our transformations, and for all our precious special contributions to that uprising of the spirit in women that we call feminism. We had a vision of love, and inside each of us is where it turned out to be.
I wish And I could sway to the music and the wind. I wish I was a lover. I wouldn't need my costumes and pretend. I wish I was a mountain. I'd pass boldly through the clouds and never end. And I wish I was a soft refrain. When the lights were out, I'd play and be a friend. I strut and fret my hour upon the stage. The hour is up. I have to run and hide my rage. I'm lost again. I think I'm really scared. I won't be back at all this time. And have I my deepest secret shared? Na 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 no. I'd like to be alone. A lover, a mountain, or a soft refrain. But have to try to bear my life in a soft refrain. When the lights were out, I'd play and be your friend. I strut and fret my hour upon the stage. The hour is up. I have to run and hide my I'm lost again. I think I'm really scared. I won't be back at all this time. And have my eye my deepest secret shared? Na 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 no. I'd like to be lover, a mountain, or a soft rain. But I'd hate to be a grown-up and have to try to bear my life in pain. And have to try to bear my life in pain. And I have to try to bear my life in pain. And I have to try to bear my life in pain.
Phoebe Snow, Harpo's Blues, one of my favorites from like her first album, Phoebe Snow. It's got Poetry Man on it and whatever. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and I have been here since 5 o'clock, and I'm getting off the air at 7 o'clock when Through the Opera Glass comes on. Now, following a feminist literary arts and political show with opera may not seem like the most logical choice, but this is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Enough said. I will be back on March 10th, which is Mothering Sunday, and I'll have all sorts of wonderful things in store for you. I can't exactly tell you what they are now because I don't know myself. But that's okay. We'll keep that between the two of us, right? And so I have a very classic record queued up, Free to Be, You and Me, from Marlo Thomas, which I didn't realize until today was put out or was partially funded by Ms. Magazine back in 70-something, 72, copyright 1972. And it says, portions of the proceeds from this album will go to the Ms. Foundation for Women, Inc. This record is designed for use on stereo or monaural equipment by children of all ages, shapes, sizes, colors, and sexes. And I think that's kind of sweet. It's a little scratchy, but then again, it is a classic, and a lot of classics are a little scratchy. A lot of things that have been around since 72 are a little scratchy, too, including me. I will talk to you people, whoever you are, in about a month. So until then, sit tight. Bye.
Thailand, Thailand, beautiful girl and boyland.
They're closing up girlland. Some say it's a shame. It used to be busy, then nobody came. Other folks tell you they're glad that it's done, 'cause girlland was never much fun.
Welcome to girlland, my good little girls. Admission's a wink and a toss of your curls. There's fun for all, from 8 to 80. You go in a girl and you come out a lady.
It's a crime to be losing the trees you're forbidden to climb. And other folks say it was always a bore to wait for a boy who would open the door to the fun house.
Wonderful girlland, the island of joys, where good little girls pick up after the boys. Come on in, look about, you go in a girl and you'll never get out.
They're boarding up girlland, some say it's too bad. They try to remember some fun that they had. And other folks say it was no fun at all. Girlland before, you'll do what you like, and you'll be who you are, as you wander in and wander out, and pretty soon forget all about.
Girlland, girlland, beautiful girlland.
Thank you. Good morning. You've got your dial set to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York.
This is Ed Asner. When I'm in New York, I listen to WBAI. Well, she's going to find the right stuff.